Finally, Lord Balaram brought him to his home as his invited dinner guest, and Arjuna ate the food the Lord respectfully offered him. Purport from the explanation of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti. It is understood that Arjuna in his sannyasi role had just finished the 4-month vows of the rainy season and could now again accept general invitations from householders. Thus, no one would have suspected any unusual motive in his visiting Lord Balaram at this time. All right, so Srimad Bhagavatam. We have more to learn from Srimad Bhagavatam than traditional hearers had to learn. What do you think about that proposal? Because traditional hearers means people throughout the ages who have listened to Srimad Bhagavatam. It's been widely recited. Mahabharata, Ramayana, and Srimad Bhagavatam, these three are the most widely recited scriptures. I mean, like publicly recited. Ramayana is probably number one in its various forms, in Hindi, Bengali, Oriya, Telugu, Tamil, as well as Sanskrit. And Mahabharata is probably number two, and Bhagavatam three, and others also. Especially these three. Vishnu Purana in the Sri Vaishnava area. Nrisimha Purana in South Orissa. So we have more to learn because traditional hearers, they knew about the culture. We also have to learn about the culture from Srimad Bhagavatam. And it's actually, it may be very difficult to understand without understanding the culture. That's one reason why Srila Prabhupada, we can surmise, gave so many cultural asides or explanations in his purports. Because to understand what's going on, this whole story, how Arjuna takes the role of a sannyasi, what is a sannyasi? Even in India, that has to be. People don't know what a sannyasi. I mean, they have a general idea, but it's been so messed up by bogus sannyasis that people think that anyone with an orange cloth on is a sannyasi because people have taken advantage of the respect accorded to sannyasis. People like Arjuna and Indra, and Ravana. Although the Ravana, they have. Taking the role of a sannyasi, they have misused it, and the result is, because I'm not blaming Arjuna here, I'm just talking about a consequence, is that people have taken the role of a sannyasi, because a sannyasi is offered food, we see here, is offered respect. So, well, that sounds good, doesn't it? You don't have to do anything, you get food and respect, but you do have to do it. One has to be a sannyasi, detached, formally renounced, not formerly, not previously renounced, but having formally accepted the renounced order of life, the vows of renunciation, and following that, and he is respected. Srila Prabhupada said, wrote in one purport that sannyasi is respected for his practical renunciation. So the respect is there. Now, in San Diego, renunciation is not anything to be respected. It's considered something, if it exists at all outside of these four walls, it's considered something, I would imagine it's considered something very strange. Of course, there is that self-realization, what's it called? Self-realization fellowship. Do they have any renunciation?
They have sannyasis.
Yeah. They might. They probably follow some rules. They're vegetarian.
I don't really know.
It doesn't really matter.
The one I know is self. The one you know, okay.
We think.
That's the problem, yeah. So, but that was very much respected because pravritti sarva bhutanam nivrittistu mahapalam. That quote, by the way, about not study, that this quote I just said is from Manu, and I believe, although I'm not sure, I have to look it up, that one about not studying during twilight, uh-huh. That may be from Manu also. Just that's something between me and Dravida Prabhu there. So the pravritti marg and nivritti marg are mentioned in the Vedas. So among followers of the Vedas, everyone's attached to pravritti marg or the path of sense gratification, but nivritti or the path of turning away from sense gratification, that gives the great fruit or the great result. But it's not easy. Even in the time of Vedic culture, when probably most grihasthas would be in many ways considered more renounced than many of today's sannyasis. A brahmana especially, the kind of life they led, they were busy in puja and study and yajna, practically up till midday. They didn't eat till midday because they had to finish all their duties first. And the guests would come there, busy looking after them, as is stated here. So it's under the context in which these pastimes are enacted. Balaram is the elder brother, to be respected on the level of the father. No one respects anyone, especially not their father, if they even know their father. We're such a long way away from what is called culture. The Sanskrit word, which is often translated as culture, is Sanskriti, which sounds like Sanskrit, doesn't it? Sanskritam. But it's not really an exact translation. Culture is understood by anthropologists and sociologists to be the way of life of a people, the way they live, and the underlying values which lead them to lead the way of life that they do, the underlying worldview. But Sanskriti has a particular meaning, that the sanskar, that which is based on sanskar, which means procedures for purification. So the Vedic culture is based around, everything is meant for purification. That's for everyone, not just the persons who are formally renounced, but everyone is supposed to be making progress towards a better destination, which is based on knowledge of the transmigration of the soul. So these, how Arjuna took advantage of this to take the role of a sannyasi. Now, he was respected, Shraddhaya, with faith. In modern Bengali, and it seems from the translation here, the Lord respectfully, it means, apart from faith, along with faith, the concomitant what should we say, attitude is respect or respectful behavior. So if one has faith, a respected person, it's say has, I have faith in him, it may, in modern Bengali, like I said, if you say he has Shraddha in him, faith, the word is translated as faith, it may be used in the sense of offer, that he is respected by that person. So all these concepts, respect, who is to be respected, the sannyasi is to be respected, the elder brother is to be respected, the father is to be respected, the sadhu, saying the brahmana, to be respected. We see this thread of Vedic culture throughout the Bhagavatam. Why was Ashwatthama not physically killed? Because one major reason is because he is a Brahmin by caste, even though he didn't act as a Brahmana. He has fallen from that status. So, it could be given philosophical justification for killing him for the terrible sin. What he did was makes Duryodhan makes all the others look like, you know, a bunch of choir boys, as the saying goes. What he did at the end of the battle, when the Pandava forces who were still alive, they were resting exhausted after 18 days of battle, and he came in and just killed them all when they were sleeping. It wasn't just the sons of Draupadi, it was many, many fighters. Drishtadyumna was one of them, major fighters. He just slaughtered them all. Like he was the power of Lord Shiva, the destructive power of Lord Shiva entered into him, so even great fighters like Drishtadyumna couldn't stand up to him. He did such a horrible thing. But still, because it was thought that he is a Brahmana and the son of our guru, that he should be the concept of that respect should not be broken. So it's very, very powerful, very, very strong. More is the sociological term. Normative, it means that which influences people's behavior and way of thinking. And I've seen this living in Bangladesh, where that culture is still very strong. How the culture of respect is an inherent part of life, and it would be. It's very difficult to, I would imagine, it's very difficult to even imagine if one hasn't lived in that culture. And in India in general, it was there, but that's broken down a lot now due to democracy. And democracy in the West, of course, is considered practically sacred. And you can even go to war for the sake of using it as an excuse. You can go and, if people are not democratic, you can bomb them to pieces so that they will accept democracy, even if it's not part of their culture at all. And it's a stupid idea. I mean, in India, most of the people, at least up until recently, couldn't even read or write. And what do they know about the political issues? They're just purchased, literally. They vote with their thumb, the thumbprint. They can't even sign their name. Now it's more education. Whether that's a boon or not is questionable. But the respect was there. Of course, well, any society is hierarchical, and even in a so-called democracy, there are leaders and followers. And even however much you try to level it out, some people are going to be, I mean, it's ridiculous. The whole thing, no one's equal to anyone in any way. No two people are equal. You can't find any two. Then we'd all just be totally, we'd be just like a bunch of robots if we were all equal in every respect. Here's one I throw out. This is a controversial one. That if we say that Jews tend to be very intelligent, good in business, good in acting, comedy, no one will object. And we say, yeah, that's true, isn't it?
They're a little hesitant to lump an entire human mass of society, but go ahead, Marshall.
Yeah, well, I mean,
they would call that stereotyping.
That's stereotyping.
It's like
you can
black has rhythm.
Yeah, well, that's another thing. If we say that blacks in general, and we find many sportsmen among them, and they tend to be good in dance, indirectly, yeah, you don't want to stereotype, because indirectly you're saying that they're superior in one way.
But you're also implying they're inferior in another way.
Just so that's why they don't like them.
Yeah.
Just so you're prepared, Marsh, what they'll say is that those are the only avenues open to them, therefore they express their creativity.
I see.
They're good at business, they're good at everything.
Well, actually,
I tend to agree with you, I'm just telling you.
There were already Red Indians who they completely dominated when they arrived, but they could have made them slaves, but they didn't, because they weren't hard working and they weren't strong, so they brought blacks from Africa. That's what I read in a book. So yeah, okay. It's not recorded. So maybe people don't like to say these things. But
they have different opinions.
They have different, but in general, if you could even probably statistically sort it, you know, if you wanted to, but no one would want to. Yeah. You can't say it, because there's this idea that it shouldn't be true, which is ridiculous. So indirectly you're saying that, you know, they're better than others in some ways. So there'll always be leaders and followers, and the communism was an attempt to make everyone equal in all respects, and of course it didn't work, as George Orwell said, all animals are equal, but some are more equal than others. He found the defect in that. So the respect, it's required to be offered to seniors. But of course, in Vedic culture, in anything approaching civilization, there was a reason to respect them also. Everyone was trained. It was actually a very disciplined system. Just like people get very upset when they read in Prabhupada's books that women are not to be given independence. But actually, no one was given independence. It's just a question of degree. You'll find in the family that as long as the patriarch of the family is alive in a joint family, then everyone has to do what he says. A man may have grandsons, but he still has to follow. If he makes any major decision, he has to consult his father as long as his father's alive. And the culture is very stable and steady also. Many of the difficult questions which arise in modern society just don't arise in stable cultures. It's just not so complex and difficult. And that culture was going on literally for thousands of years. This culture which we're reading about now, of inviting sannyasis to the home with respect, that's going on even now. That particular feature of the culture is going on even now. And that's Krishna's culture. That's the culture that Krishna lives in. So, yeah, we have a lot to learn about. Although it's presumed by modern Western man that we are at the pinnacle of human civilization. We've thrown out all those useless things of the past, and now we have come. Now we've understood that all the old ways of thinking, they're simply repressive. But actually, that society produced people of fiber, of integrity, and with a society in which people lived as contented lives without having to go through various seminars and read many books about self-improvement, and you have to read a book about how to have children. Because, you know, it's such a funny thing. How to, you know, it's just. Everything that people do, it's they have to read a book to get some training in it. And then there's big gurus, as they're called, who profess the values of being honest. And then you choose, do you want to do that or not? But the whole society, one thing, it was very strict. As we were discussing the other day, Srila Prabhupada mentioned about up until recently in Kashmir, the Maharaj, he followed the system. It's not just an Islamic system, it's much decried in the West, but the system was a thief is deprived of his ability to steal by cutting his hands off. And you don't have thieves in a society where they are treated as such. The dam, for one thing, is people are afraid, and if they're caught, then that's it. Of course, you may say, well, someone may have made a mistake, so then they're stuck with it for life. Well, the culture was, the system was, the risk of making a mistake, You could say it's a risk of making a mistake. But the other side is, if you don't want to take that risk, then you have modern society in which you can't even walk on the street without fear of being attacked. And you have both hands, yeah. Well, a few people might not have them. But as a result, punishment was severe and crime was very little. That was there. In Russia, until recently, the communist society was what we would call a repressive society, but at the same time, crime was very little. Of course, there wasn't much to steal. But as soon as freedom was given, then all bad elements came out. And the Russian mafia runs much of Europe nowadays, so we're told, and much areas of the land of the free. Yeah. I was told in the Czech Republic, practically they run everything. All the businesses have to pay their money and everything. So they weren't there previously. Freedom is granted in Vedic culture to Brahmanas especially. And Kshatriyas, but they also have to act under the direction of the Brahmanas. So Brahmanas are persons who are renounced. They don't have materialistic motives. So they're trusted. If they're given freedom, they're not going to misuse it. And they're also bound by the Vedic injunctions. They have to be a Brahmana. What do you have to do every day? All the different rituals they have to follow for purification. So it's a completely different outlook on society. Of course, traditional societies up until recently all over the world also had similar values, respecting seniors, this rampant divorce it wasn't there anywhere in the world until recently. So is it better? Is modern society better? That we have to see. It appears that, what is that? Egalite, fraternite, what's the other one? Liberté, the principles of the French Revolution. Liberty, fraternity, egalitarianism. It seems that the idea of granting this to everyone would be very good. It's based on the supposition that people in general are good, and if given freedom, they will use it properly. But practically, we see the opposite. That if they give it, people, unless most people, especially in Kali Yuga, unless they're disciplined, they won't be good. They'll misuse it. How many people, if they see something fall off the back of a truck and they look around and no one's watching them and the truck's sailing off down the road, how many people will catch the number of the truck and give them and return the goods, especially if it's something which they find they want? There's a saying in Tamil that about this so-called Brahmanas, that a Brahmana is 100% a Brahmana in the temple, 50% in his home, and when there's no one watching, he's a Shudra. Is this society actually better? The idea. I read something a few years ago in the Kali Yuga Purana, namely the newspaper, that an American student he was saying that, well, America is the best, modern America is the best society in the history of humankind because it gives maximum opportunity to every member of that society to the pursuit of happiness, which...
So many homeless.
Why so many homeless people? Well, they're pursuing, I guess, happiness. They just didn't find it.
Still looking.
But It's the glorification of the individual, and then everyone is, what practically happens is everyone is pitted against everyone else, and the happiness is defined as the opportunity for sense gratification, and therefore the idea of is you can enjoy yourself as much as you like as long as it doesn't harm anyone, and therefore homosexuality, that's nothing wrong, doesn't harm anyone, so, you know, what's the harm? So what is the harm? What should we reply to that? It's difficult for people to understand our reply unless they understand that there's the whole purpose of life is not sense gratification. The purpose of life is purification of consciousness. So without that, then naturally society degrades. And then it loses its strength. America got its strength from religious conviction. And we find that any powerful civilization, when it becomes powerful, then the members engage in sense gratification grossly, and then it loses all its strength, and then it's overrun by savages. That happened to the Roman Empire. Didn't happen to the British Empire, but they lost, Prabhupada said, they lost India. The strength of the British Empire was the Indian soldiers. When they lost India, then they knew, well, we're finished, we can't maintain it. So Iraq, Mesopotamia, that used to be a great flourishing civilization. Now, it's, Iraq was not even known, the name wasn't even known to most Americans now. Now it's a testing ground for various missiles and things like that. So what is the point of this class? The point is that there is a great culture which Srila Prabhupada wanted to revive, and we can't even begin to understand the nuances of the pastimes of Krishna unless we understand this culture, what to speak of entering into them. The whole point about the gopis being the topmost devotees is that they are superficially the wives of others. And in modern society, if someone's the wife of someone else and they go off with another man in the middle of night, that's, well, you know, tough luck for the husband. But in Vedic society, that is considered just the worst possible thing. But they're giving up their respectfulness. They gave up everything for Krishna. That is glorified. That is their sacrifice. That they offered everything to Krishna. So without understanding this culture, and without acting according to this culture, we can't really be devotees at all. Because in devotional life, humility is practically demonstrated not simply by saying, please accept my humble obeisances, but by acting respectfully. And of course, a Vaishnava respects everyone, but there's a, what is it? Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, shakale shaman, korite shakate, dehonata, jata jata. Please, he's praying to his guru. Give me the ability to respect all suitably. Jata jata. Here means in a proper way. So we respect the ant, not by putting him on a pedestal and offering him arati, but by not treading on him. Srila Prabhupada, he was brought to the zoo in Bhuvaneshwar once for a walk. And a lion was in a cage, and some of Srila Prabhupada's disciples were goading the lion because he was in a cage to try and make him angry. And Prabhupada told them not to do that. He said, after all, he's a lion. So even the lion is to be, Prabhupada was implying that he should be respected. He's a lion. He's in a cage, but he's a lion. So don't annoy him. unnecessarily. So all living beings are to be respected. Gurus are to be respected. This was Arjuna's whole dilemma. Guru means simply one who is, one meaning is someone who is senior. So that's parents, anyone who's older by age, anyone who's higher by caste. A learned a brahmana, especially a learned brahmana, and all Vaishnavas are gurus. Among Vaishnavas, they see all Vaishnavas, all other Vaishnavas as gurus. And especially those who are teaching, giving instruction, guiding others, and those who are giving mantras in a formal manner. I mean, mantras are only to be given in a formal manner. They are to be respected to the extent that one can give one's very life for them. So in this way, by offering respect up, then knowledge and mercy reciprocally comes down. It's not that we can attain Krishna consciousness or any advancement in life by simply by our own endeavor, but by the mercy of superiors, which comes down from them, then we can go up. But we have to attract that mercy by offering respect up to them. It's stated by Manu that if one fails to stand when a superior enters, then the person may not stand, but his life airs go up and leave him. In other words, well, it's even physically debilitating. Now, people might not accept that nowadays, but Manu says so, and we accept that. All right, so there was not a very... There was a bit of a rambling discussion, and I'll open it up for more comments, questions, objections, or whatever else there may be. Yeah, I'll ask Mahatapa Prabhu first, even though I saw you first, because he is senior to you. In all respects, in age, devotional standing, position.
He's taller too.
He's taller too. But that doesn't count. That's only in Mlecha culture. If one's got a big, strong body, he's considered superior. Among Kshatriyas, that may be also. Yes, please. Hridayananda Maharaj described it, explained the word Shraddha, yes?
Yes, Shraddha, or Dha, to place, Shad, the heart.
To place the heart. That's interesting. I didn't hear
that's
that.
That's right, that understanding of giving respect.
Yeah. Shraddha, to place the heart. So it's not simple. One may respect out of fear also, but this etymological derivation suggests respect out of love, not out of fear. There are other words for faith. Vishvas is a common word. Yes.
Sorry. A question about Ashwatthama. Heinous.
Yeah, that's the word Prabhupada used, heinous.
Yes. And he was, you know, then he throws this brahmastra, they're running after him, and he's running. Throw the brahmastra, he throws the brahmastra, Arjuna counteracts, so eventually they arrest him, right? And then the question is whether to kill him or not. Okay, he shouldn't be killed because he's a Brahmin.
There are various reasons why he shouldn't be killed. They're offered.
Yeah. Because he's not killed. He's humiliated. They cut his top knot off and let him go.
Yeah.
Again, he throws a brahmastra to try to kill Parikit.
Yeah.
Right. And he's, of course, that's counteracted. But then he's out of the scene. My understanding from all of this with Ashwatthama, and I may confirm this if I recall correctly, is that he is still alive.
Oh, yeah. He's one of the seven Chiranjeevis.
Yeah, and that when the new Satyayuga begins.
Yeah, this is a common question. That he'll become one of the Saptarshis, or Vyas. He becomes a Vyas.
So how
he's the next Vyas.
How is
How is that? Well, how is that Ashwatthama, who's such a baddie, becomes Vyas?
It's a long time to be purified.
Well, I heard he's wandering incognito in Vraja Dham. I saw that somewhere. I can't say exactly where. Again, it's one of those things. There's unlimited work to do in Shastric research, in philosophy, in culture, in Puranic history. Why such and such a person was born. In Garga Samhita, there's a lot of narrations of in the previous life, such and such was like this. And the
we're given so much instruction that someone should be recognized not by his birth, but his qualities.
We are given so much instruction, someone should be recognized by his birth and not by his qualities. But nevertheless, in Vedic culture in general, it's generally the birth is considered very important. It's definitely there in Mahabharata with the whole history of Karna, who is right in Bhagavad Gita. Is it Krishna or Arjuna? In the 11th chapter, refers to him as Sutaputra, the son of the chariot driver. They always refer to, the Pandavas always refer to him as Sutaputra, insultingly, the son of a chariot driver. So it was very important because generally one is born in such a situation because of his eligibility due to previous karmas. He's placed by there, Daiva Netrena. And then he's brought up in that culture. So it's generally expected that the son of a Brahmana becomes a Brahmana. And the culture was, nowadays we, if someone's into martial arts, we say they're a Kshatriya, for instance. We say, this is a Kshatriya devotee. But the businessman of today can be the employee of tomorrow and vice versa. There's no clear distinction between the varnas. But it was a very clear distinction in Vedic society. They'd live in different areas and their whole outlook was oneness was there, but the Brahmanas, they were interested in study and renunciation, at least they're supposed to be, and religious activities, and they did lots of yajnas. And whereas the Kshatriyas, and both the Kshatriyas and the Vaishyas were interested in wealth and opulence, but the Kshatriyas, they were very martial spirited also, whereas the Vaishyas are business spirited. And the Shudras, they're again in another category. They need to be dependent on others. And then again within Shudras we find there are so many different occupations. But it may be, we find in Bhagavatam, of course, the sons of Rishabhdev, there's the Navayogendras who are Brahmanas, and then there's nine. There's others who are, a few others, and then most of them were Kshatriyas, and like that. So it's not, generally it's fixed, but there may be. Also we find the Jabali, the son of Jabala, in the Satyakarma, who became... I don't know if everyone's following. Dravida Prabhu understands all this, but it's... I guess it's not basic stuff. It's not that difficult to follow also, but... that's the famous story of the Satyakama approached, who is that, Gautam? And then he asked to become his disciple. He said, well, are you a Brahmana? Because he'll only teach a Brahmana. He said, I don't know. So he said, well, who's your father? He said, I don't know. Go and ask your mother. So the idea was that ask your father, then means that we understood by his father whether he's a Brahmana or not. So he asked his mother, and she said, I don't know either. I had so many boyfriends. So he went back and told that, and the guru said that, well, if you can tell me that honestly, such a shameful thing, then you must be a Brahmana. You're definitely not a Brahmana by birth, but you're fit to learn. Of course, that's interpreted differently by the proponents of caste by birth. They say that his father was a Brahmin.
Prove that his father was a Brahmin, that's what they'll say, right?
Maybe. I can't remember how they justified exactly. They may be very... Yeah, all these things. If we're to establish Vedic culture, we have there's a lot of work to do in research, actually. A lot of work. It's a necessary function that has to be done, undertaken. Yeah, anything? Yes, Vasilios.
I was going to add, Maharaj, that George Washington, you were speaking how the country was founded on religiosity.
He was the one who, I cannot tell a lie, is it?
I was thinking he was going to use that as an argument for being a Brahmin because he didn't lie to his father.
He didn't, he didn't lie to his father. Of course, he cut the tree down.
And we don't even know that part's true.
It may be one of those fables also, who can say? Yeah, George Washington, the honest beef eater, yes.
And he actually said about democracy, he said, unless the people are religious and moralistic and educated, then the whole system of democracy...
Unless the people are religious and moralistic and educated, then the whole system of democracy...
Will not work.
Well, that's another misconception, that by educating everyone, they will all become religious and moral. Prabhupada, among the many things he said, which are not at all PC, was that we shouldn't. Not everyone should be educated. Mass education is the level of the average the person what they read. I mean, there's a huge number of novels, and almost every novel is just completely stupid. And there's cartoons and what do they call this? Tabloid newspapers. Is that the same word you use here? Tabloid newspapers. And all the magazines are just all about fishing and all kinds of stupid things. Fishing's the least of it, yeah. Sex magazines. Like this. And it's increased the lies, actually, in democracy. Instead of just rulers being that's why I say in some ways Hitler was better than our modern leaders, because at least he said, here, I'm glad this is not on the... it's not out in public. But he said, look, you know, we're Germans and we're jerks. We're going to take you over. We're stronger than you, and we're going to dominate you and to hell with you and kick you in the backside and shoot you in the head and this and that. But nowadays, in the name of democracy and humanitarianism and justice and truth and peace, people, just like Iraq and Afghanistan, it's for geopolitical purposes that they're invaded, but it's in the name of democracy. So it just increases hypocrisy, that's all. It's the same thing going on, but it's just hypocrisy. Yes?
Just a small historical footnote. The way the original, and I'm not arguing for American democracy, but the way it was originally set up, there was the Electoral College.
There was an Electoral College, I see.
No, and here was the principle.
Yeah.
The principle established by the founding fathers of America was that most people in the backwoods don't know what they're doing.
I see.
And they would vote for the smartest man they knew. And those smartest men, the Electoral College, would then select the president. And only until whenever it was that they have this general democracy. But it used to be that, my point being that even the founding fathers of America accepted that democracy didn't mean that everybody voted.
I see.
But everybody had a vote to select who they thought was the smartest person. And then those educated, supposedly educated. So there was a filtering system. Mm. And they accepted it.
Oh, we still have elected college.
And it's an...
it's seen as an anachronism.
And it gave us George Bush. But
it's seen as an anachronism.
Yeah, it's been... No, they changed it to, you know.
Well, in one sense that goes on, but it's just that the you vote representatives and then they vote among themselves.
Yeah, my point is, all I'm trying to say is I'm supporting...
They recognize that,
They recognize
Yeah. Whereas the Vedic system, there is a king and he has brahmanas who advise him. But he's responsible and he's trained. You get a vena, yeah, now and then. Yeah. But he was dethroned by the brahmanas. Yeah. That's why brahmanas are necessary in society, otherwise there cannot be human civilization. Without knowing the goal of life and without being detached, one cannot give. We have to be absolutely detached. Yes, so time is going on. That's a profound statement. It's true. And it's always true. And we'll end the discussion here. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.